Guys, I'm absolutely delighted to welcome somebody that I sort of now consider an internet friend. I don't know if there's a better term for that. Feels a bit cold, Petra. So somebody that I've hung out with in a couple of different circles where we've sort of overlapped through either pain management stuff or the work we're doing on Twitch. And now we chat during the week over on Discord. So guys, welcome in sort of lived experience expert, Petra Phoenix. Petra, how are you?
Hello, Joel. I'm good, thanks. And yeah, I mean, internet friend feels a bit weird, doesn't it? But yeah, we're mates now, I think. I'm going to go with that. Yeah, definitely.
I think since pandemic, I think 90% of my friends are sort of in that format anyway, or in that category. But I always do these really posh presentations, introductions for guests. And then when I've got someone I feel like I know really well, I don't know, it's like always like casualness. So I probably didn't give you enough credit there. So first of all, before we get on to like all the formal stuff, thank you for bringing the dog on. Do you want to introduce them to everyone?
Yep, this is Tiny Dog. The clue's in the name. She really is very, very small, and she's very, very much hoping that I'm going to give her one of her treats that's just, there you go, she knows the word, that's just sat here on the desk.
So licking lips and everything.
Yeah. What I'm going to do is I'm going to let her jump down there into her bed and give her one of her treats so that I can try and talk without being too distracted. She says, it's the eternal quest. Right. Yeah. But I will be covered in dog hair. Apologies, it's just the nature of the beast.
And if you're listening to the podcast back, guys, I want to see the dog, then go check out the YouTube channel. But yeah, I love Tiny Dog. So every time I watch you on stream over on Twitch, I see the dog sitting there. And that was my plans when I got a new puppy, and then quickly realised that spaniels are never going to sit in a room for 3 hours on my lap. Nah. Which was a shock after having a Jack Russell.
She's part Jack Russell. So she's part Jack Russell, part Chihuahua. For those that can't see, she's a black and white dog, looks very like a Chihuahua and also very like a tiny Jack Russell. She's a little madam. She's an absolute sod, but she's absolutely adorable and full of love.
Animals are always welcome. And that's probably the first one we've had that's here by design. We normally get a lot of cats running across screens and keyboards and things. They're very well behaved. So I suppose many of us here that are watching live know you already, Petra. But for those who don't, do you want to maybe just give us a bit of background on yourself before we get into the medical stuff?
I'm Petra. I live up in the northeast of England. Sometimes it feels like the back end of nowhere, but it's a great place to be. And I study. So I'm two thirds of the way through my degree at the moment. So I've come back to that as a mature student, she says, doing air quotes. And other than that, I stream on Twitch. I've got grown up kids. They've moved out now, you know, so I'm kind of at that point in my life where I'm kind of wondering what comes next. So I'm studying and doing all that sort of thing, as well as dealing with all of the other things that go along with chronic pain malarkey, you know.
You seem to pop up with whatever I do, so you're obviously very busy. So like, obviously, as hinted earlier, we met via sort of pain management circles, which was a quite fun experience for both of us when you sit on the Zoom call and you both recognize each other, but you never sort of been formally introduced through that sort of platform. But do you want to maybe tell us about your experience with pain? So like, how did you get to us being on that same sort of call that day? And I appreciate this might be a long story, so take as much time as you need.
This is quite a long story because I'm older than I like to admit. No, I'm quite happy to admit how old I am. But yeah, it's been going on for a number of years. So I don't remember a day where I haven't been in pain in at least the last 21 years. So it's a lot of time. However, I was diagnosed, she says, air quoting again, in about 2015, 2016 with chronic pain. Chronic pain syndrome is, I think, what's actually written down on my medical record. And I was also told a couple of years before that I had fibromyalgia, but it turns out that's not on my medical record. So they're the main sort of health conditions that I'm dealing with as regards to pain. My pain journey probably started way back when I was pregnant with my youngest child. and my body fell apart. Not great at carrying children in that manner. My body can't cope with it. Everything fell apart and I was in a lot of pain throughout, and it kind of carried on a bit after that. Shortly after that, well, a few years after that, so there was always things grumbling that never quite fixed themselves after being pregnant. Then a few years later, a couple of years later, I started to get pain in my shoulder and my range of movement was impinged. And I kept going to the GP and I kept being told, you've slept on it funny, you're fine, go away, take some paracetamol. But I knew it was something more than that. And it took about 3 years of continuously making appointments at the GP every month or so to say there's something wrong. And it took, one of the GPs looked at me in exasperation at one point. Well, what did the, you know, you've had scans and things, haven't you? What did the X-ray show? I said, no, I've never had scans. I've never had anything looked at. We've never looked at this. Nothing has ever been done. No. He said, oh, do you want me to send you? I said, yes. Yes, I do want you to send me for something. And I was sent for an X-ray. Now, at that point, thankfully, you didn't have to wait very long for an X-ray because it was in the same building as my GP. So I had an X-ray maybe a week or so later, and they discovered I had calcium in my tendons. There's a proper term for it. I don't know what the words are. Something like calcified tendonitis or something. Anyway, it means calcium in your tendons. So it impinges your range of movements because your tendons can't move freely. Now, this is something that normally happens to people in their 50s. I was in my late 20s at that stage. Late 20s, early 30s. And so they weren't looking for it in me because I wasn't the prime sort of, I wasn't the people that normally get this. So I had to have an operation, the calcium was taken out of my tendon. I did a long period of physio and rehabilitation on it. And that's, my shoulder's now fine. However, I feel that that was the start of my chronic pain journey, not Jane Purney, that's a different thing entirely. A chronic pain journey, because I think that's the point at which my body was sensitized to pain. Following that, a few years later, I was refereeing roller derby, I was doing long walks, I was generally very fit, very active. And I was doing a 26-mile walk for breast cancer charities to raise money. Now, I did this walk. I hadn't trained properly for it. I'm going to say that straight off. If you're doing something like this, put in the work beforehand. It's worth it. And I ended up with bursitis in both of my hips. Now, for those that don't know what bursitis is, the way that your joint moves in between the ball joint of your hip and the socket, there's a pad. It's like a little pad, and that's your bursa. Those had become inflamed. So obviously every movement I took, it was hurting the, it was touching on that and it was causing pain. And it feels like right inside my hips. I had various bits done on them. I had injections in both the hips. I had, again, physio and stuff. And all the inflammation died away. The pain went from my left-hand side, but to this day, I still have pain in my hip, in my right-hand side. So I still have bursitis pain, even though I no longer have bursitis. And that is why I've got this chronic pain syndrome diagnosis. I was just trying to see where the dog's gone. She's took herself in.
I've been watching, not that I haven't been listening. It's been quite a performance here, getting comfortable.
I'm well aware that people come and see me for the dog. It's not a problem. So I have this bursitis pain in my hip constantly. Now, while all this was rumbling on, I was also getting strange aches, just general aches, nothing that you could put them down to, but bits of me would be very sore, you know, bits like he would be very sore or on my shoulders, on the outside of my shoulders there, my knees, they'd be very sore points. And at that point, fibromyalgia was diagnosed using trigger points. I say diagnosed at that stage, fibromyalgia, and still is to some extent a diagnosis of non-diagnosis. So they look at various different things and exclude everything that they know it isn't. And then if they can't find anything else, then they give you this fibromyalgia diagnosis. So I was told by a rheumatologist that I had fibromyalgia. It was only a couple of years ago when I asked for a letter from my GP so that I could give it to my university for help with, for disability support, that I discovered that fibromyalgia wasn't on my record. And so I'd gone for 10 years assuming that I'd gone on my record and it just wasn't there. But I do show all those signs. Now, in about 2013, 2014, which is, 2012 was when the bursitis started in my hip. In about 2013, I managed finally to get someone to take me seriously, that the pain was still there. And first I was prescribed things that did me no good whatsoever and wiped me out on incredibly low doses. I'm incredibly susceptible to medication. It's ridiculous. To the point I've hallucinated on pucker tea that you buy in the supermarket. I'm incredibly susceptible to medication. And so they gave me an incredibly low dose of amitriptyline, and it was wiping me out from when I took it from 9 o'clock at night till midday the following day. But I had young children at home, so that just wasn't safe. So I said, I don't want to do this. I don't want to take medication because my children's safety comes first. I can put up with being in pain as long as I can look after my children. I can't have them in danger through me being zombified by drugs, albeit legal ones. And so I was referred to a pain clinic at that point. Thankfully, the pain clinic I was referred to was a good one, because countrywide, they're a very movable feast. Some of them are brilliant, some of them are dreadful, and then you've got everything in between, really. Thankfully, mine was a really good one, who were right up to date with the top research in pain science. They knew of the work of Lorimer Moseley. They were building on those sorts of bases, and so they knew what they were talking about. So I did this. I did this pain clinic. I was under them for about a year, give or take, and learned so much. Whilst I was there, though, my pain got worse rather than better, which sounds counterproductive. However, the techniques that I learned at the time and the things that I've used since then have been key in getting me back up to health and able to do things, able to function like a human being, which I couldn't do at that stage. And so, though at the time, I think the reason I felt like it was getting worse when I was at the pain clinic is that I spent so much time thinking about my pain. So I was giving my pain all my attention. And so it was like, yay, I can, you know, I'm going to run riot here. I'm going to absolutely have your life. And it did. And so basically, so I went through the pain clinic. Once you go through the pain clinic, you're then discharged. And so I have no consultant to deal with pain. If I have any questions about pain, I have to go and see my GPs, who are generally less informed about chronic pain than I am. So I have no NHS help when it comes to dealing with my pain. I manage it myself with the help of peer support things mostly. But yeah, essentially, I have no NHS help with my pain now and haven't had for about 10 years.
Luckily for you, I haven't got a pen and paper, because I would have been taking so many notes of similar examples. And just I could literally talk to you all night about. So, for example, amitriptyline, and Dylan was like only one when I was put on that, and I just couldn't function. Even if I took it at tea time, like 5 o'clock. Yeah. I was still wiped out to lunchtime the next day, and it just wasn't safe. I was a zombie. And that whole, I wanted to ask you about how you felt. I appreciate that, like, I've provided some like questions in advance, so if I go too off the beaten track, please tell me.
It's fine.
But like with that, you said about the fibromyalgia, as somebody that myself lived with a condition for a very long time until I had to request information that got me a letter that I noticed something wasn't on there. So nobody fronted up to me and said something had changed or never became official. How did that make you feel, that you're in all this pain and then the thing you thought it was, and again, without going off on a different subject, that whole fibromyalgia, if it's not everything else, it must be that. You can see why people get such a bad rap with that condition and the label of that condition. Yeah. How did that make you feel? Like, so you're studying, and then you suddenly get that sort of bombshell.
Yeah. Well, I was a bit bewildered to start with, but actually, when I thought about it longer, it's actually been an advantage. Because you don't have, as you just mentioned, the negative connotations that a lot of medical professionals still have about the label fibromyalgia.
Yeah.
Because it's an invisible illness, as most chronic pain conditions are, a lot of people see you as, in Victorian terms, a malingerer. You know, a person, you're making it up for, you know, because you just want attention, or you just want the benefits, or you just want the whatever. Incidentally, I'm not claiming any benefits, so that's absolutely not why I would say I have fibromyalgia. Just for the record, the fact I feel I have to do that even here says something, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So it's often seen by people that don't understand it, because when they did their training, it wasn't covered for more than 10 minutes. The pushback you get from medical professionals regarding it, I haven't ever had that. And now it makes sense why, because it wasn't there.
Yeah.
And so I could go, and granted, I've lost a lot of weight fairly recently. And so I was quite overweight before, I was obese, bordering the next category up, which is a horrible term and I can't remember what it is, but it's not nice, but bordering on that. So most of the time I was told, it's your weight, go and lose weight. It'd be interesting to see what the GP would say now, but there we are. But I didn't get that pushback because of fibromyalgia. I have a theory about fibromyalgia, is that it's not just one condition, that it's a whole range of things. And I think there's a whole spectrum of conditions that, you know, cover all sorts of different chronic pain things, and fibromyalgia sits within it. And it will be, it will turn out to be several different things, because there's so much we don't still know about the way that pain works. But that's a whole other aside that I could wander off down and should probably rein myself in again.
No, it's worth mentioning though, because it's like, I was at EULAR this year, and they're finally now talking about how psoriatic disease, which is what I have, how men getting obese with that is a symptom, not a cause. And, you know, I went most of my life, it's a different condition, but same sort of subject, where that, you know, people are saying, lose weight, you're causing your arthritis. And now there's sort of that conversation is turning to say, well, actually, there's a link there. And it's genetically, or the, you know, chemically, the makeup, it leads to that as a symptom. And I think you're spot on with fibromyalgia. But you said about that whole, it's not this, so it must be fibromyalgia, it struck a chord with me, because I see so many DMs over that, people feeling very hopeless or lost, or like a fraud is a sort of word that sort of comes up quite a lot.
No, absolutely. And it does, to stay within the health banner, but to kind of slightly veer to one side, although it is linked. So many people don't believe you when you've got chronic pain. Medical people don't believe you. Family members might not believe you. The disability people almost definitely won't believe you. People walking past don't think you should be using a stick because you're too young. Why have you got a wheelchair? What are you doing with that? And people feel the right to question you as somebody who looks younger and are using disability aids. Funnily enough, they don't do it for glasses, which are a disability aid. Just putting that out there. I can't remember. Oh, yeah. And so, like, within the last year, I've been diagnosed with ADHD. And when I first went to see the doctors about it, they said, well, why do you want this? Or how is it going to help you? I said, I've already got chronic pain conditions that mean that people don't believe me. I believe I have this. If I don't have an official diagnosis, people aren't going to believe this either. And I spend so much of my life battling for people to believe me. I don't want another thing I have to fight them about.
Yeah.
And she kind of looked at me. I was like, oh, okay. And then we got somewhere with being referred for those sorts of things. And it's just really frustrating to have to battle all the time just to be believed. And it's one of those things that I say often in well, I've done a couple of sessions with, there's a group called Flipping Pain, who educate people about what pain actually is rather than what you think it is, which are often two separate things. And I have been one of their lived experience experts. And I got to say to a room full of health professionals, because they did a session for health professionals and people that are dealing with people with chronic pain, that when we come to you, you have to gain our trust. Because by the time we see you, if you're here, you've got an interest in chronic pain. You are going to be one of the more educated people that we see about it. But by the time we get to see you, we've seen so many other people that haven't believed us that we've had to battle for it. For we assume you're not going to believe us either, because that's always been our experience. So you have to gain our trust before you can start educating us on anything. Because otherwise what we're going to hear is it's all in your head, because that's what we've been told so very often. Yeah. You know, and I know that's a kind of aside from my personal journey, as it were, but it's that whole kind of, it's one of those things that really, really winds me up, that we don't get believed. And why would we fake this? Yeah, I mean, yeah. For God's sake, I would give anything more or less not to be in this much pain. I wouldn't wish this on anybody, even people I really dislike, because it's evil. It sucks your soul out sometimes. It makes you feel like you're the most useless person on the planet, because other people can do X, Y, Z and P while they're at it, and I can't do even X or Y. And I ought to be able to do these things. And we tell ourselves this all the time. We say, oh, I should be able to do that. Why can't I do this? This is the thing, you know, other people can. Why can't I? And the answer is you're in a hell of a lot of pain, and that's a fucking full-time job.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we don't give ourselves credit enough for the way that we live life, that we manage to do things despite the fact that we're in pain that would floor most people. Yeah. I'm very passionate about this. Can you tell?
Oh, yeah, no, totally. And the reason I sort of went off track a little bit is I think just every now and then we get people on here where you can tell they've been through that pain management experience, that lived experience, you know. So you and Ian, Mr. Cookfulness, which I'm sure you know. It just stands out, because we're all talking the same language, and the words you use there, manage, and it is a job, because it is managing it all down. And I remember my first, I've had lots of experiences over the years with people thinking you're faking and all this sort of thing, but my first real experience of it being from somebody in a white coat, if you like, was during the pandemic, where I finally got a rheumatology appointment. I'd gone really downhill, everything got cancelled. That was when you couldn't even get a blood test because there were shortages and stuff like that. And it was the first time I'd ever, since I was in a wheelchair as a teenager, went to rheumatology with a walking aid. I just had a little fold-up stick because I didn't trust my knee not to give way. And the guy was like, can I ask, what are you using that for? And I was like, well, my arthritis. So I thought, I was intentionally awkward. And he said, like, yeah, but why? And I said, because my knee is sore. I don't trust it. It feels weak. And he made me feel so dirty. And it was the first time I'd used it. And that really shocked me. And I remember sort of trying to, I didn't communicate it very well, but trying to say to him, like, I'm a new dad. If there was any time I was not going to fake being well, was when I was suddenly going out of the door to work with a totally different purpose, because I suddenly had this little thing in the house that changes your perspective. I'm like, if there was any time when I was not going to be faking being sick, it was going to be now. You know what I mean? So with that, like, pain management, like, you and I have both been through it, and like you say, there are very different experiences. Yeah. And I get a lot of flack on social media when I sing its praises, because I know it's not always done brilliantly. I too really struggled with pain during that. And do you want to maybe talk a little bit, because I know what caused mine, and you hinted at it earlier, that in that process for people that are maybe just starting out on that path, and it's maybe so easy to quit or turn back to art, looking for a sort of magic bullet that might not be there. Do you want to talk a little bit more about that experience?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So, the noise you can hear is the dog drinking water just behind me. Apologies. Right. So pain. With chronic pain, acute pain is a different thing. If you burn yourself, that acute pain, there's something wrong. But all pain, acute or chronic, is a warning system. It doesn't mean, sorry, the dog wants to go out. Hang on. Go on, then, you. It doesn't actually necessarily mean there is anything wrong at all. So for me, I've got pain, but there is no inflammation. There is nothing physically wrong with my hip joint, but I still have pain. The other way, the way that it really sort of hit home to me, realizing that pain didn't mean there was anything wrong, was phantom limb pain. If pain is, if you think of pain as being in the site where it hurts, then how the hell do you get phantom limb pain? Because there is no limb there to hurt, but it still hurts. So therefore, it's in the brain. And that doesn't mean it's all in your head. I'm not saying that. Yeah. So the idea that the pain is... Oh, sorry, the dog's asking to get up again now. She's a nuisance. You're a nuisance, aren't you? An adorable one, but a nuisance. And so the idea that, right, I've jumped three steps ahead now because my brain's working at a million miles an hour and thinking of four things at once. So take a step back. What pain is, it's an alarm system. It triggers your body to try and avoid the situation that caused it pain the first time around. And what chronic pain is a hyperactive alarm system. So it's as though you've bought a new car and you've turned the alarm up as high as it can go and the sensitivity up as high as it can go. And consequently, if somebody walks past, it goes off, even though there's no danger to the car. That's basically what's happening with chronic pain in your body. It's thinking, crap, 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 crap. I'm going to be hurt. I've got to stop you doing that. So I'm going to give you some pain. And the particularly insidious thing about chronic pain is that the more you listen to it, the worse it becomes, because it thinks, excellent. It doesn't think, that's a weird way, but you don't know. But essentially what happens is your body thinks, right, I stopped at that happening. So that didn't hurt me now. So it's okay. So I didn't damage myself. So now the next time you do it, you'll get pain slightly earlier. And so you'll stop slightly sooner, and then you'll get pain slightly earlier, and you'll stop slightly sooner. And before you know what, you're doing nothing. Yep. Now, the more attention you give that pain, the worse it becomes. So if I listen constantly and I'm constantly thinking, is that going to hurt me? Is that going to hurt me? Yes, it is. If you've got chronic pain, it will. Of course it will. Because you're looking for it to. And so your body is being primed over and over again, not just to... you know, to cause the pain as a warning. But not only that, but it picks up these signals and it develops new ways to pick up the signals. It develops new pathways, new nerve pathways. It opens new gates so that you can get more of that information through. And so it becomes like this downward spiral until it's just pain. And so you've got to... So basically stop it in its tracks and go, no, I'm not listening to you for this time. I'm going to stretch myself slightly further, by which I don't mean you go out and do everything all at once. That's counterproductive. But you slowly, and it takes a lot of work. It takes so much work. It's not an easy fix, which is why people don't like it. But it does help in the long run. It's the best thing I've found. And you do tiny little bits. And you push back against the pain and say, see, it didn't hurt when I did a bit extra. So you don't need to warn me until a bit later on. And then you push back a bit further. And then it doesn't have to warn you till a bit later on. And slowly you get to do more and more instead of less and less. But it's difficult because there are some days when it really hurts. And all you want to do is hide under a duvet. And you don't want to deal with it, and you don't want to push back against the pain because it's an ongoing battle and you've done it every day for the last 20 years. And you just want a normal day. But you can't get a normal day because there's always the pain. So because when you're at the pain clinic, you're focusing on the pain because you're learning about what the pain is. You're learning about how it works. You're learning it more technically than I can explain, because there are all sorts of long medical sounding words that I never can remember and never have been able to. And there's all of that goes on. And so you're giving the pain a lot of attention. And so because you're giving the pain all the attention, it goes, get in there. I'm going to do this. And it rises to the challenge. And so it feels like you're taking a backward step when you go to the pain clinic. They're teaching me all these things. I'm trying to do all this stuff. I'm thinking about it all the time. I'm working on it constantly. And it's getting worse. But gradually, as those things that you put in place become automatic to some extent, and you're not thinking about it, you're not deliberately thinking about it so much, it gets easier and you start to win back against the pain, as it were, and you start to be able to push back against it rather than it constantly pushing back against you. And I kind of think about it as me taking the battle to it rather than it bringing the battle to me. And I do it on my terms. I'm not doing it on the pain's terms, because I'm going to hurt regardless. So what are my choices? I can go back to bed, which sometimes I do. Or I can go out and do the thing. If I go back to bed, I've missed out on whatever the thing was. That happens. If I go out and do the thing, I'm in pain, but I was going to be in pain anyway. So I've not lost anything, but I've also gone out and done the thing. So it just makes it that bit better. It's really difficult for those closest to you because they see you getting worse and they think, well, it's not working. They were so much better before they started going to the pain clinic. Why are they carrying on doing this? It wasn't working. Can we not just go and get something prescribed? Can you not just take a pill? How can we fix it for them? How can we help? What can I do to help you? Unfortunately, the answer is not lots, because it's our battle. Sometimes we need people to listen and just be like, yeah, it's really shit, isn't it? I'm sorry you're going through that. But I think it's really difficult for my husband, because he likes to be able to fix things and he can't fix this. And he wants to fix this. And when I moan about it because it's horrible, he wants to sort that out for me. He wants to be able to take that away and to me not have it anymore. And he can't, because it's my battle. And it's a lonely battle, which is why finding other people that are in the same battle or a similar battle is so important, because they're the people you can go, I've had such a bad day today. And they go, oh, mate, I had one last week. It's awful, isn't it? And you think, I'm not in this alone, even though it feels like I am. And that's vital, absolutely vital. I don't know if I answered your question then. I think I rambled on.
You don't think you answered? Firstly, you're the first guest that's made me teary talking about a subject that I should be well and truly used to by now. But secondly, I think that 10 minutes for me personally was the most important 10 minutes we've ever had on the show, genuinely. And that's not doing other guests a disservice. It's just the words you spoke could have literally come out of my mouth in terms of that experience. And I'll be quick, because I know I'm conscious of your time and everything, but like things good. Like, you know, the bed day. So like, I'll often talk to my wife, like, and it's a really hard conversation to have in the advocacy space, because there are other people in different parts of their journey. And if they haven't gone through that sort of pain management stuff, you know, it's a really hard thing to say that laying in bed doesn't fix anything. But for me, I'm now at that place where I know physically it's not going to get rid of anything. If I have a bed day, it's because I need it mentally. Do you know what I mean? And I'm really honest with myself about that now. But 2-3 years ago, I wasn't. And it was like, oh, I need to rest. And I'll tell work I'm having a bed rest day. But I now know that physically it does nothing for me. It's a mental, it'll be depression. I've got to that point where I can't face the day. And that's okay. As long as you put a limit on it and you say, right, for one day, I'm going to do that. And you're open with people. I just saw near cheeks has put, I'm a fixer too. Yeah, my wife absolutely is. And I think that's why I've put so much strain on our relationship over the last few years as well. Like it probably has your other half. And And yeah, it is so hard. And everything you said was absolutely perfect to the point I'm going to clip that, and that could literally be its own mini podcast episode on its own. So thank you for sharing that. And guys, anyone that wants to talk to Petra or myself, I know Petra's really open about this stuff, and I am. Yeah. We've got other people in the chat as well. It's what we're here for on Sunday nights. And we'll get onto that peer support bit in a minute. But anyone who wants to sort of like ask more about that, because I think you probably do it as well, don't you, Petra? But I now go to my local pain management clinic and talk occasionally, or you know, try.
I don't have any links to my local pain clinic
because where I'll write to them.
Where I went to the pain clinic is in a different NHS area to where I am now, because we've moved house since. I have got vague links with another pain clinic that lives very, very close, operates very close, but it's not my area necessarily. And I am going to get in contact with them and offer my services, because it is really important to do.
Yeah, and the thing is, you said it really earlier on in our conversation, where you're kind of preaching to the choir with pain management. By the time you get to pain management, they know the value of distraction. They know the value of hobbies, socialization, and you know, how I went from being super social to, you know, like literally a couple of weeks ago, acknowledging that I have no real world friends anymore. Like, which is why I still find myself how I introduce you tonight, San. You know, I always put this safety net thing in, because I'm well aware of like that what that pain has done to me socially. So what I do is I just go in first session or two of the group therapy stuff and just try and get people to ride it out, because I was so skeptical. I had no interest in sharing my experiences with a room full of other people in pain. I thought it would make me worse. Yeah. And like you say, the first few weeks is rough, and it's therefore it can, you almost get that, what's it called? Like evidence sort of confirmation thing. Is it confirmation bias?
Yeah. It's getting worse. I told you it would. I'm getting worse.
The evidence. Yeah. And therefore you want to quit. So like, I think it's really important that people like you and Anne and others that we've had on the show get places in those, for people like me, where I was a couple of years ago, to just remind people, just give it a chance. And I remember the one bit I was going to, I don't want to talk too much because you're the guest, but the one bit I was going to quit at, and I don't know if they'd done something similar with you, they got us to go and find like a sweet or a chocolate in the house. So I found a Malteser, and I just had to put it on my tongue and leave it and think about what it was doing and the dissolving and how it tasted and made it last. And I literally text my wife saying, this is bullshit. I got no interest in it. And then you suddenly realize, oh, for 10 minutes, I felt nothing. And the way I started to allow my brain to accept it and let it in, guys, for anyone sort of listening to this back, sort of wanting that sort of help, think of it like tattoos. You know, you have a tattoo, and when you're looking down, and when it first starts, it hurts like hell. But then you find you spend 10 minutes talking to the tattooist about the Walking Dead or some, or whatever it might be on telly, and you realize for that half an hour, you didn't notice anything. And that's exactly the same principle, isn't it?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think this is going to sound really odd to people that aren't in pain. I feel really lucky in my pain journey. So despite the fact I currently have no NHS help with my pain, I feel lucky in that ever since I was young, I've kind of understood that your pain will vary. So I remember reading, Mum and Dad always used to get Reader's Digests. And so there'd always be this big pile of Reader's Digests in the house. And I'd just sit, because I read everything. It was before the internet, friend, you know, before the internet. So you had to read actual books and things. And so I would just sit and I would read anything that was sat still long enough, I would be reading it. And I still remember there was I can't remember what the story was. I can't remember what it was about. I can't remember anything about it other than it saying, well, pain is relative. Think about when you stub your toe compared to when you're in the middle of a sports match and you get tackled. You feel the tackle a lot less than you feel stubbing your toe, but there's probably a hell of a lot more impact when you're tackled. Now, that, you know, that kind of, oh yeah, no, pain is different. So at that point, even as a child, I thought, oh, well, if I bump myself, it's not that bad. I can keep, you know. And then when I was first told that I had this pain, when this pain in my hip just wouldn't seem to go away, and people kept saying things like chronic pain, I Googled, it wasn't even Google. I looked on YouTube and looked for chronic pain. and stumbled across, completely by chance, the work of Lorimer Moseley, who is one of the world's leading pain research, is physio leading the world in pain research, basically. And there was a 5-minute video with a cartoon where he was explaining what pain was and how chronic pain is different to acute pain. And I found that very, very early. So because of that, I always thought I can do something about this. So I never got the to the point of this is all completely hopeless, because I'd always been sort of primed that actually, no, maybe there is a different way of thinking about it. Maybe I can do something about it. And that's why I say that I was lucky, because I kind of had that in the back of my mind to start with before I ever got to a pain clinic. Which is, yeah, but I didn't know how to do it. And it was the pain clinic that kind of taught me how to do it. And so using, like you say, the mindfulness thing, I think we had raisins rather than chocolate, but yeah. And it was that whole kind of concentrate on there and do something different. And people say, when you say mindfulness, people roll their eyes at you, and because it's got this reputation as being what they tell you to do when they don't know what to do with you. But actually, it does help. And I'm really sorry, everyone, but it helps.
Yeah.
Now, I have ADHD. Theoretically, it should be very difficult for me to do mindfulness. However, again, I was very lucky, and I'd done a course on Future Learn from Monash University about mindfulness. And again, the only thing I properly remember from that was them saying, yeah, you say your mind's always wandering, that you can't do it because your mind's always wandering. But the fact you've realized that your mind's always wandering proves that it's working, because mindfulness isn't stopping your mind wandering. It's watching what your brain's doing. So if you can tell me that your mind has been wandering, then the mindfulness is working. Yeah. And that made me go, oh.
So relatable.
Well, shit.
When I realized I suddenly had insight, and it's like I couldn't stop it. And I think that's really important for people to remember that they're human. And even if you get really good at it, there will be times where you have that sort of setbacks. But once you get to that point where you can start acknowledging, and I learned some of that through some like intensive CBT as well. It's like, okay, I've got these thoughts, they're trying to protect me, acknowledge them and do what you want to do anyway. And once you can start sort of working with it, but I think the trouble is you hear things, don't you, like it's in your head, or there is no inflammation, or your scans are clear, and you instantly, because of society, how we're programmed and everything, it's like, oh, there must be something wrong with me, you know what I mean? And to stop fighting it and start working with it is such a long journey, isn't it? And to stop, for me anyway, it was to stop looking for a fix. The energy I was putting into blaming people, wanting to blame a doctor or a medicine change or whatever it might have been, the minute I switched and started, and it wasn't an overnight thing, and started putting that energy into living with it and working with it and acknowledging it and letting it in, but not to the point to it beats me, but so I can just manage it. I don't know. It's like somebody opening the curtains on a sunny day. That's the only way I can sort of explain it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That idea that you can do something about it, but if you've used all your energy in fighting it, then you've got no energy left to do anything. So stop fighting.
Yeah.
And it's like the easiest. Somebody said about other things, sometimes the only way to win the fight is not to take part. And that's kind of what I'm doing. So although earlier I did refer to me taking the battle to the pain, it's kind of different because I'm not, it's kind of me going out there and going, no, I'm going to do it anyway, rather than what am I doing? How can it, what can I, and you kind of, for those that are just listening to the podcast later, I was kind of dodging and trying to get out of the way of the pain, as it were. And so it's that whole kind of difference between taking it to it and being right, I'm going to hurt anyway, so you can come along with me if you like, but I'm going to do the thing. Or like I say, not doing, and then what's your life? And because you're moving less, you do put weight on. That makes your pain worse. And then you can't get any help because you're overweight. and in pain, and not just in pain, which you were before you put the weight on because you were in pain. And so it's that whole kind of, yeah, it's that downward spiral, and it's just having to say, right, no, stop. Yeah. I'm not
doing this. It's all fueling the depression and low mood as well, yeah, isn't it? Like, I know me, the weight is a big issue, just mentally, you know?
Yeah. It's like, it's easy to try and let it win. It's like being on a helter-skelter. So you start sliding down, and it goes down and down and round and round and down and down. And that's you kind of battling your pain all the time, but it's kind of you going down, you're going. And then when you go, no, right, I'm going to do it anyway. It's like sort of you push your hands on the edge of the helter-skelter, and you stop yourself from going any further. But now you've got to climb back up the helter-skelter. And it's bloody hard work. It's much easier to sit down and go down. But you've got to keep going. And you go, and that, but then you do kind of get to the top, and you're still limping a bit, and you still, you know, but you get a much better view when you get to the top than if you keep going all the way down and sliding all the way down the bottom. But it's hard work to get there. Yeah. And yeah, it's really, really, yeah, it's just like, it's the constancy, is that a word? The constantness, that it's just constant all the time.
It's relentless, isn't it?
Yeah, relentless, that's the word. And it just doesn't stop. I'm aware that I started a sentence and I don't know what the end of it was. My meds have run out. So my ADHD is just bouncing.
And I'm well aware I am happy
to. Yeah, no, it's okay. I am happy to answer questions if people do have questions. I'm happy to stay on a bit longer and answer questions if people want to ask me them. I'm happy to talk about any aspect of my pain whatsoever, because the more open I am, the more people understand about chronic pain, and I'm absolutely happy to do that. Equally, if you're knackered and want to get off and want me to go away because of that, I'm also happy to do that too.
No, it's quite ironic how what we've been talking about tonight. So as Nia Cheeks in chat will contest, it's like, I spend all day saying I can't do this, I feel rough, rubbish, finding excuses, and then I start it and it becomes a distraction, and I come off absolutely bouncing from it. Yeah. And then I have to recycle that all over again tomorrow. So it's no issue for me. I'm just conscious of your time, especially on a Sunday night. But just, I think there's so many shared experiences, but I like the different shades on it. You know, for example, I hit rock bottom before I went to pain management. You sort of got in there a little bit earlier, but there's all these sort of common threads where I think it's really important that we talk about it, because, like, for example, for me, and I know it's not about me, but I think I'm just conscious of anyone listening to this back or any, if you need to get evidence to help you as well, accept and let some of this stay in, go get it. So for me, my rheumatologist said, there's no inflammation, you have a no active arthritis flare, and I didn't buy it. I just, whatever, my brain could not process that I was feeling all this pain and the scans were clear. So then I went and found physiotherapists that said, everything looked good. And then I went and demanded full MRI scans of my spine and neck. And again, that come back, apart from a bit of wear and tear, there is nothing you can do that can make it worse. There's nothing going on there. And it was only then when I started then accepting, okay, Joel, mentally now you have just got to face this mountain in front of you. And it's really important for people to remember as well, I think, it's like when you're fit and healthy, you're also fit and healthy and not in pain. And then fast forward 3 or 4 years, like positions I'm in now, and you were probably similar. You're not only not fit and healthy, you're overweight, you're in all this pain, you're dealing with things like fatigue and brain fog, which you might have never dealt with before. And that is like running a marathon to try and get back where you were and get some momentum to start breaking down that pain and get the movement back and everything else, isn't it?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I went, like I say, from being able to walk 26 miles from refereeing roller derby, which is pretty intense, to being able to do these things, for getting around, being able to do stuff, to not being able to walk the mile from my house into town. Now that makes you feel useless. Because the other thing you do is not only do you compare yourself to other people, you compare yourself to the you before the pain. And that's just as counterproductive as comparing yourself to any other person, because effectively that is a different person, you know. And it's those days when I do compare myself to what I used to be able to do, they're the days I end up in bed. because I look at what I used to be able to do, you know, roller skating at speed whilst refereeing and giving, you know, making decisions for an hour constantly, just going one, two, every time. Now, I don't know if you've ever spent any time on roller skates, but that's hard work.
It wouldn't end well for my knees if I did, but I can imagine.
But it's, you know, and it's just, and I could do it, and it was fine. It was, you know, I was exhausted, but it was fine. You know, I could walk a long way. I've never been able to run. I've never been a runner. I still maintain you never see a happy jogger, but that's a whole other story. You know, and it's just that constant kind of having to get up and deal with it. And when you having that all the time, and then you think, but I used to. So now I'm useless.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you're not, because, you know, so often, and I'm going to get onto a slightly different topic here because I do that, but we judge our worth by whether or not we can hold down a job, by, you know, by those sorts of monetary values, because we live in this capitalist society that money is what's valued. And often people with chronic pain find it very, very difficult to hold down a traditional job because it isn't built, the working world is not built for people in chronic pain that need to take rest breaks at bizarre times and need to be able to come in late one day and are happy to work back like another day to deal with it, but if they lock the office at five, that's no good at all. Easier if you've got remote working, but that's happening less and less now again anyway. And so often, not only are you in pain, not only can you not do what you used to do before, you end up having to give your job up. You end up, you know, just feeling like everything that you built yourself on no longer applies. And the person you thought you were isn't. And so you have to, you have to reevaluate what's actually important. And so, yeah, I don't work, but I can come on here and I relate to people and I can see the comments and I can see the things that people have said. I can see the way you reacted. And clearly what I say has an impact on people. And clearly what I'm saying can help somebody. And if that's the impact I had, if the impact I had was to help another person be able to go on and live their best life, then my God, that's worth doing. That's so much more worth doing than working a 9-to-5 job in an office. I mean, it doesn't pay very well, but it's worth doing. And it's, if there was a way of also making a living whilst helping people, that would be ideal. I haven't worked it out yet. We'll get there.
That's a bit of a dilemma. And the trouble is, once you have seen that other side, it is so hard then to it's like, let's say someone switching on the light, isn't it? And it's very hard to get fulfillment and satisfaction and motivation in anything else you do when, and it is a gift, Petra. And like, you know, me and you have had very similar experiences. And yeah, I'm still hanging on every word. It's a gift, you know. So it's good that you make time for it because, as somebody who does similar, I know how hard and the unseen stuff behind that, you know, and the messages and all the other stuff that you do that people don't see that isn't like a social media sharing thing. You know, it does make.
Well, this is it. I mean, I often bob around places where there are many people with chronic pain, one of which is Joel's Discord, incidentally, and it's well worth going in there because it's one of the few places I know I can go, I'm having a rough time, and someone will just give me a hug and say, yeah, we're there, do you want to talk about it? I very often don't want to talk about it. I just need other people to know because somehow that helps. So it's well worth having a look at Joel's community, getting into Joel's Discord, going and seeing him over on Twitch and stuff, because it's a really supportive, helpful community that look after each other. And that's kind of the important thing, especially for me, not having that NHS support as well. So I do, all of the support I get comes from peer support. And so having places like Joel's Discord, like the Footsteps Festival. So Anne that's in chat, Anne Livingston runs a craft group on a Wednesday lunchtime. that's well worth looking up as well. If you go to, I can't remember what the website is off the top of my head.
If Anne wants to put it in chat, I'll share it on screen so everyone can see whether they're watching it back or not.
So, and that craft group, they do other things. For those that are more, those that are quite, well, not even very academically minded, but want to know what's going on in the world of pain research, they do a journal club where you look at papers that have been put out that often have a link to pain and things like that. And you can go and you can talk to other people and you can view it through the lens of a person in pain rather than a researcher. And you go, well, what happened with this and what happens with that? And through doing those sorts of things, I've been involved with people's research that they're doing in various universities regarding pain, because they've asked if people in chronic pain can help them out. And I've just seen Phoenix Paul's comment and I was nearly in tears there.
Yeah,
thank you, Phoenix Paul. Being able to sort of give back in that way. So being able to give my experience as an experienced person with chronic pain, I've been living with it a hell of a long time now. I know what I'm doing. I don't always do it very well, but I do know what to do. And there was another point, but it's left. Never mind. We'll leave it there.
I think you got a suitable distraction, though. Excuse for after that comment, because that's absolutely lovely. And I think it's good that you get that feedback, because as somebody that also streams and everything else, sometimes it can feel like you're banging your head against the wall or you're not making any sort of progress. And then your community will just remind you of like why you get out of bed in the morning sometimes. And I think the thing is as well, guys, for anyone watching or listening to this back, that bubble can be tiny. It doesn't need to be in a world of social media and people chasing 10,000 Instagram followers and all that nonsense, and I'm quite vocal on a lot of that. It really doesn't, like, our community's like really small, but we all know each other. We know where we're what part of the world we're from. We know the name of our dogs and all that sort of stuff. And it doesn't, and half the time I'm not leaning on them in terms of, I'm not going into the support forum on Discord and saying, oh, can I have help with X, Y, and Z? It's more that social leaning, isn't it? Where like just knowing you're not alone, or someone you can say that's a bit shit, and I think we've both used that term now, so that's my like catchphrase. Say that's a bit shit, and people know it.
I do have badges that say I'm a bit shit sometimes. It's from another thing that I do, which is I'm going to mention it on here, but it's a thing, an organisation called Camarados. There's a lot that goes on over down your way, actually. There are no people that do stuff with them down your way.
Right.
And basically, they set up public living rooms just anywhere, like on the street, in a, just anywhere. So I've been involved with them. They'll just drive up with a van, bring out a couple of sofas, a table, a lamp, and some games, and just set them up on a street corner. And they'll stay there till they get moved on. But what happens is you sit down and you talk to people. So you don't have to solve anything for anyone. That's one of their principles. No fixing. You're not there to fix someone's problem. You're just there to be a human. And you sit next to them and you have a conversation. And then when you're finished, you move on. But just having that human connection can make more difference than someone saying, oh, but have you looked at this? And have you seen this group? And do you know about this? And have you tried to get help there? And have you spoken to this person? Because then what you do is you've come away with admin. You've not come away with reassurance. sometimes that is what you need. That's really helpful. That's it, camaradas.org. And they're great. And they just set up these public living rooms, and they're all over the world. They're down in New Zealand. They're over in America. They've got them in Oz. There used to be some in Berlin and over in Germany. I don't know if they still are, but they're all over the place. And it's just dead nice. And you have disagreements, but one of their rules is you have to disagree respectfully. And if people don't, then they'll chuck you out, because you have to be respectful to people. And I've been involved with them for a long time, and they have been a huge help to me, because I can go and have a moan. And instead of somebody trying to fix me, what they'll do is they'll give you a job to do of some description, because they say if someone's struggling, ask them to help you, because it gives you a sense of purpose. Yeah. Now, you know, on your worst days when you've not had anything to do and your pain has been at your worst and you're in bed and you feel useless, if someone says, can you help me? It makes you feel $1 million, because even in that state, someone needed you. And therefore, you've got a use. And it feels counterproductive to say, if someone's struggling, ask them to help you. But you know what? It can work. And I've watched it work. And I've seen it happen. And people come back. Not everyone. Some people come back if you hold a regular living room. And gradually, bit by bit, you realise over the year they've been coming in, they've managed to get out of that house where the landlord was treating them badly. They've managed to apply for the benefit they've been putting off for years. They've managed to do things because people were treating them as a human. Nobody's helped them with it. Nobody's sat down and filled a form in for them. But it's given them the confidence to think, I deserve to be a person. And I carry a lot of that over into my pain management stuff and my when I relate to other people with pain, because so much of it is transferable. And it really, really helps. Because human connection is one of the most important things.
Shows though as well. I'd just like to say it does show, and just I know I should be focusing on our guest, but the same as like Anne, you know, the stuff that you and Anne and others in that circle just drop into my inbox occasionally, where you can see I'm wobbling way before Joe Public can or other people sort of closer to me might see it. And it shows that compassion and that having that different perspective as well, I think, of like, you know, knowing what to say in a slightly different way that just sort of reminds us that, you know, we still add value, because you used the word useless earlier and I literally use it every single week in my life. I'm still working on that. But that is that sort of like that feeling, that need to add value, isn't it? And not be a drain or a burden. So, I just want to compliment you on that, because it definitely shows.
Thank you. But yeah, it's a weird world. And there's a lot of time I wish I wasn't a part of it, because then I wouldn't be in pain. But then I wouldn't be me and I wouldn't be the person I am. Yeah. So as much as I detest this pain and I wouldn't wish it on anyone, it's part of what's made me who I am, because almost my entire adult life I've been in pain. Yeah. So, you know, I'm 46 now. I've been in pain since, since I was, 25, 24, 25. So most of my adult life, I've been in pain. So it is a part of what's made me who I am. And as much as I detest it, I'm also kind of grateful to it, because I don't think I'd be as willing to sit and listen, because I've had to slow down, so I've got time to listen. I wouldn't be as able to relate to people, because I've had to sit and stop and listen to people and realise what they're going through and be able to pick up those little cues that you don't spot unless you've been in pain. And, you know, all of those things that I value in myself, and many of them are because I am in chronic pain. And I don't know who I'd be without it. Sometimes I think, oh, I could be this. I could be doing that. I could be, you know, I could be running my own business. I could be doing X, Y, Z. I could be. But would I still be me? Who knows? So as much as I detest it, I am also grateful to it.
It gives you time to sort of like, consume different perspectives that in everyday life you wouldn't have. You know, there's definitely things that I've done the last few years I would have never have done without the passion for this, or the empathy it gives you, or whatever that, you know, I don't really know how to describe it, but, you know, me going halfway across the world on a plane solo, just, it's not something that would have happened for any other purpose, you know, other than maybe Dylan. He's 18, he's gone backpacking and he's asked me to come rescue him from somewhere. There isn't a lot of things that would get me to do that, you know. But for me, I think it was like, it assumed a side of me that I didn't know I had, but it's because I had time. Like, I think you used similar words there. It gave me time to listen and learn.
It made me stop and listen. It gives you that time to kind of pause and think, well, I can't do, So what, you know, I can't go and do, so I can stay and be. And I'm more myself now than I've been before. So, you know, it is shit, but it's also been a blessing. Yeah. And that's a weird contradiction, but it's true.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think, and I can see from chat other people relate to it. And I know, I definitely, and I had an OT once, actually a pain management OT, if you're watching, sorry. You but like she was like, just don't become Mr. Arthritis. And I remember her saying it, just don't, because she could see the route I was going down, and I get that, and actually that influenced me then getting involved in other areas like the mental health thing and men and parenting and stuff like that, because I sort of remembered those words. But actually at the time I thought, well, it kind of helped me, almost like we talked earlier about letting it in, you know, and almost like having that label or whatever you want to, it kind of like wearing that hat did allow me to accept it a bit. It definitely got to a point then where it was unhealthy and I had to let some of that go, and I couldn't be a fixer for everyone and all this sort of stuff. But there was definitely part of that grieving process, which comes up a lot on the show.
Yeah.
That helped, you know, taking in those stories. And I guess that's one of the reasons I still do this on a Sunday night, just to keep my finger on the pulse and remind me so I don't slip back down that path. You know, it's therapy, isn't it? That peer support and everything definitely. Else.
And you know, I'll always tell you if I think you're going down that way. Yeah. You know, I'll just go and say, "Oi, Joel, hang on."
Yeah, I absolutely loved your DM the other day, or message on Discord, wherever it was. And yeah. So like I say, between you, Anne, and a couple of others, I feel like it'll pinballed around and back into the right place pretty quickly, which is exactly what I need. This is I'm well aware, by the way, guys, for anyone at home, I normally do coffee shop sort of conversation things. They tend to be very informal. Tonight was one of the nights where I actually prepared a script, and I don't think we've really done any of it. So apologies, Petra, if that's thrown you, but this.
No. It's been okay. Because I kind of knew where we were kind of thinking of going. And because there was somewhere we were thinking of going, that was fine. If we went off it, I'm used to tangents. That was fine. But as long as I knew where we were headed to start with, it didn't matter if we got there or not. You know, the journey is the thing, isn't it? But
and I'm well aware that we've gone way over the 40 minutes I said I'd need you for. So thank you so much.
I didn't realize what time it
was. Yeah, I know. So I'm very conscious of you know, of your time, and also, you know, medication demands and stuff like that. So I'm going to let you go at this point, because I'm very grateful, and everything you've said has been so powerful. You, without doubt, you've broken all sorts of chat records on this show. Like we get lots of comments on the videos months down the line, but live chat is, yes, by far the most engaged I've seen it. So thanks for everybody that's watching this live and has got involved. Before you do go there, Petra, we've talked a lot about things like Twitch and stuff like that. And you've been so kind in plugging me, and you really didn't have to. Where can people find you so they can hear more of your awesome wisdom and lived experience?
Cool. Yeah, I mean, I wasn't being kind, I was being truthful. That's a different thing entirely. But I stream over on Twitch. It's twitch.tv/PetraPhoenix. Phoenix is a really difficult word to say, to spell. I'm really sorry, I didn't think about that, I just made up but PetraPhoenix on Twitch. You can also find me, I don't have traditional social media because it wasn't good for my mental health. So I've got a Fediverse account on Mastodon, which is @PetraPhoenix@MendedDrum.org. And you can interact with me on there. I like chatting with people on there, so that's great. In fact, I think that's where we first bumped into each other,
yeah,
isn't it?
It was over there. Yeah.
And then we happened to be on a video call, and I was like,
yeah, it's the weirdest thing, because there wasn't that much of a time gap either. No. So it was almost like the universe just like put us in the same place at the same time. But
and can I just say thank you to the people that have come over, that I have recognized names from my chat on Twitch, who have come over and supported me. And thank you so much for being here. It's been absolutely delightful to spot your names popping up and supporting me and being there for me. You're an absolute delight. So yeah, my Twitch community is a really lovely place. People are really supportive of each other and just generally kind of look after each other and make sure we're all right. And that's just what I'm trying to do, because I can't change the world, but I can change my little sphere. So if I can help the people around me, and then they go on and help the people around them, then the world will change eventually. But I can't do the whole thing all at once, so there's no point me even trying. So I'm just going to do my little bit and support the people there. And if we can all do that, the world's going to be a much better place.
Yeah, what a great way to end. And I think for anyone watching this back or listening to this back, guys, I'll put as many links as I can in the show notes and where you can find Petra. And also on my Twitch channel, Petra is one of the few people I have that are recommended when she's live and I'm not. So if you head over to my channel, you will find a link on there on the homepage to Petra's if you don't find it. By the links we've provided. Petra, thank you so much. And also to the doggo, which is having the time of its life. I'm getting lost there while doing the interview.
Say bye bye, tiny dog. Yeah. waving your tail at everyone. Well done. Good girl.
Well, thank you so much for everything, Petra. And yeah, don't be a stranger. We'd love to have you back again one day as well. That'd be great.
Lovely. Would love to. Yeah. Thank you very much, doll. Bye bye, everyone. Bye bye.